The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. What's up, nerds? The NBA offseason is heating up. About to get into that. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me. That includes Ryan Clark on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Who does RC have as the biggest threat to the Chiefs? He'll be on in a bit. Be a part of Max Kellerman Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. First, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Harden and Westbrook making noise. What's going on with the leadership in Houston? One thing you can say about Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni. D'Antoni's never won a championship. But by playing the most efficient possible style, maybe he was too doctrinaire about it, right? Doctrinaire means you go by your philosophy sort of no matter what. You have to be ideologically pure about it. And maybe it was a little bit too much with note we're only going to place the highest yielding bets. We'll place the most highest yielding bets. 3-point shots, paint, free throw line. Maybe they had to be a little more diverse in the offense. I don't know. All I know is they never had the most talent. But a couple of years ago, with a Golden State Warriors team with a healthy Steph, Klay, KD, and Draymond Green, not to mention they had Iguodala on that team. All those dudes. Know who had home court for Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals? The Rockets. And if not for the worst shooting performance in the history of basketball, Rockets would have beaten the Warriors? It's not possible. How do you beat that Warriors team? Well, D'Antoni's system. And by the way, Daryl Morey constructing that team. Well, Daryl Morey's gone. And D'Antoni's gone. And the players on the Rockets, the best players, Harden and Westbrook are like, well, what's going on? Harden and Westbrook by themselves are not good enough to get past LeBron and AD. They weren't good enough to compete with that Warriors team. They should have never been competitive. Yet because of Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni, they were. You can say live by the sword, die by the sword. Live by the analytics, die by them, right? And this is the kind of danger of playing that way. What if the whole team goes cold from three? Well, I would say if the whole team, including the leader of the team in James Harden, goes cold from three in a game seven, and your second best player, Chris Paul, isn't available, yeah, you might lose by single digits. Yeah. D'Antoni had some bad luck. I think Harden and players who played for him realized that he put them in a better position to win than anyone else. Are they headed out of Houston? They out. And where should they go? 888-SAY-ESPN. I love the idea of Harden on, Westbrook on the Clippers. And look, Chris Paul is a great fit wherever. But I love the idea of Westbrook on the Clippers because Paul, he's a more of a team player, I think, than people realize. Paul George had his best season with Westbrook as his point guard. And the real issue the Clippers have right now is no one dynamic off the bounce. No one pushing the tempo. Too much kind of half-court basketball. You think about Westbrook. I mean, Patrick Beverley can shoot the three and play some defense. And Westbrook can't shoot. But you think about Westbrook with Kawhi and Paul George. And you even think about the personalities. Westbrook was a mismatch with KD because he had the alpha personality, but KD was better. Kawhi's not worried about alpha, beta, this and that. Kawhi does his thing. And if Westbrook can help make Paul George look the way he did a couple years ago, what can he help Kawhi do? Kawhi and Paul George are both high volume, high percentage scorers, right? They touch the ball a lot and they score at a high and efficient percentage. And they both play defense. That was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Meantime, Doug Peterson, Eagles head coach, finally responds to what Brett Favre said on First Take to Stephen A. and Molly and me yesterday. That, and by the way, look, if you listen to this show at all, you know that I've gone at Carson Wentz a bunch because, not because I think he's the worst quarterback in the world, I think he was being overrated, and I think he's overpaid. Understand every football player earns, deserves a lot more, generates a lot more revenue than they get paid, but there's a salary cap. So the reality is you got to rob Peter to pay Paul in the NFL, right? So if you give Carson Wentz $100 million, You're going to have some holes in other places. Carson Wentz's play is going to have to elevate the team and make up for those holes. He has not done that. And he's injury prone. And because he's, like, even McNabb was benched. You know what happened that same season? They went to the NFC Championship game, which they used to do every year back then. But Wentz is not held accountable. Turned the ball over 13 times in the first 8 games in Eagles territory. He's not held accountable. That's why after the last game, he comes out at the post-game presser, hey, maybe I'll never know the fine line between, you know, when to extend the play and when to eat it, you know. It's just kind of going to haunt me for the rest of my career. I'm going to have to deal with it. But that's the way we play around here. Whoa! You sure? You sure all your teammates want you to play that way? You think the fans? You sure about that, Carson Wentz? That's what's holding you back from being a better quarterback, from being an actually good quarterback instead of middle-of-the-pack guy. And usually by year 5, if they haven't figured it out, they ain't going to figure it out. You know, you're still waiting for Jay Cutler to put it all together? All right. You'd be waiting for a long time, forever for Carson Wentz, I think. So Brett Favre comes on First Take, says, you know, I'd have gone with Nick Foles. I will remind everyone, Nick Foles, who was a stud at Arizona. Nick Foles, who the first time he had a chance to start, went 8-2 through 27 touchdowns to 2 interceptions for Chip Kelly. Then he wound up in a bad spot with Jeff Fisher, and then he went up back on the Eagles, led them to the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz didn't play in those playoffs. That was Foles. And then the next year, they were dead in the water. Foles takes over for, once again, an injured Carson Wentz. The team catches fire. They win a playoff game they're supposed to lose at Soldier Field. They almost did the same thing at New Orleans. Then Foles finally gets paid, so he goes to Jacksonville. They're terrible. Foles is not the kind of guy like Wentz whose talent maybe can, like, make up for some deficiencies. Foles is the kind of guy where if you give him what he needs, he can operate your team for you and come through under pressure. So Favre said, I'm surprised they didn't go with Foles. Peterson didn't say anything for like a day, and then finally said, no, you know, the GM said Wentz, and the owner says Wentz, and I say Wentz. Really, coach? Because what I hear, I'm just saying, I talk to people, and what I hear is Wentz has never really run Peterson's offense. He has way too much power on the team and in the offense and changes a lot of stuff. Hard for Peterson to operate under those circumstances. However, okay, he's backing his guy up. I don't think Howie Roseman's backing Wentz up. If Howie Roseman were backing Wentz up, why'd he draft a quarterback in the second round? If Wentz was 33, okay, fine. Wentz was 26 when he did that. Drafted a quarterback in the second round. Let me ask you this. If Wentz's contract was coming up now, you think they give him another $100 million? I don't. I agree with Brett Favre. I don't think Doug Peterson's telling the truth, actually. 888-SAY-ESPN. Raj, my screen is completely blank. I have no rundown in front of me.
Well, we have a rundown, but you just went, you know, you caught an audible like Brett Favre, and you just did something totally different.
That's
so
right. Now that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, now you have to vamp for Ryan Clark. And so I'm just putting it blank since you're up there calling audible.
That's fine. But even when you're doing the rundown, you always have to have something in front of me. For example, so I know if there's someone on the line. Because right now it's an awkward amount of time. There's like a minute and a half before Ryan Clark. I've come to a conclusion on my Wentz point. I'm saving my LaRussa stuff for the next block, as we discussed. I want to take a phone call. Maybe I want to allude or refer to another point that's coming up later in the show. But if I have a blank screen, Raj.
Matlock and I weren't happy about that, so we decided to leave it blank.
Andre in Massachusetts, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yeah, how you doing, Max? Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I feel Houston made a notable mistake in terms of letting Mike D'Antoni go, and I'm going to tell you why. Look, in terms of the playoff mistakes, mishaps, and the lack of championships, fine. But people forget, James Harden won one MVP, finished second twice, and third once in the MVP race under Mike D'Antoni's leadership. Before D'Antoni comes to town, people forget James Harden was not everybody's best friend. He wasn't a beloved guy in Houston. There were game-winning shots where his teammates didn't celebrate. Mike D'Antoni and his offense and him saying, listen, James Harden's not a two. He's a point guard. He's a quarterback. Let him run my run and shoot, if you will, 7 seconds or less offense. Let's see what happens. That's when James Harden's career took off. Okay, Adidas merchandise and all the other stuff took off. It was under Mike D'Antoni.
And yeah, so but forget said, about – I agree with you about that. And Stephen A. and I debated. I thought it was a good idea to make him a point guard. Stephen A. debated me about that originally, going back a couple of years. But forget about what it did for Harden. Look at what it did for the team. The Rockets played a Game 7 at home against a Warriors team that was so loaded, it was like they cheated, like they played the cheat code. And LeBron, before their series, was like, nothing I could do with these guys, basically, and got stomped. But that Warriors team with KD and Steph and Clay and Dre and Iggy, all healthy, that Warriors team had to hit the road for a Game 7 at Houston. And Houston didn't even have Chris Paul available to them, their second best player, and they were so overmatched in terms of talent. What were they doing playing a home game? And they should have won that game. They had the worst shooting night from three in the history of basketball, basically. At one point, I think they missed like 27 straight shots. There's something like 1 for 27, something like that, from three. What? It's like ridiculous. And they lost by single digits. Mike D'Antoni, with the Suns, had they not been all those ejections, probably beat the Spurs and win the championship that year. This dude has gotten close, and guess what he's never had? He's never had the team with the most talent. Ryan Clark joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. RC.
What's up, my guy?
What's going on? We got a lot of football to cover right now. I don't know where to start. There's so much going on. You know what? Let's start with Cam, because actually you and I agreed about this on the show today, on First Take today. How Cam has to play. Does he sell out to be the best version of himself, even though it risks his future? What do you say about that?
I say you do, Max. I think this is it for Cam Newton. I think this is his opportunity to show that he could be the reason why a team wins again. I mean, we all understand that they don't have the weapons on the outside, or this team isn't as talented as some of the other teams we've seen the New England Patriots have. But Cam Newton is that X factor. I think for so many people, the reason we thought that would be a good place for him to go is because they could use him in the run game. He can also be a guy that gets out of the pocket in play action and can make plays with his legs or his arm. And right now, you know, there are a couple of plays away from being a winning team, or at least being 500. So if you're the New England Patriots, you understand, okay, we got to use Cam to the maximum of his potential. And that means running the football with Cam. That means maybe him being your lead goal line rusher, your lead short yardage rusher, and also being able to make the plays in the passing game. And if he doesn't do that, I believe it's over for him. Not
you know what?
The Patriots
I like,
in their season, but for him.
I like that point you make, because there's something about Cam's situation where everything's dovetailing in terms of doing the right thing now. Like, it's like in the fight game, Ryan. A lot of times the blueprint, like the interest of the fans and the interest of the fighters are diametrically opposed. The fans want to see you tested in a tough fight, but the fighter, if you're a fighter's manager, you're like, I want this guy to suffer as little damage as possible, make as much money as possible, right? Minimize risk, maximize reward. And a lot of times you could say, well, football is the same way. You have to be irrational. You have to buy into this sacrificial thing irrationally, because no one's going to help you on your bottom line later in your life. If you have CTE, if your bank account's light, get your money. But in Cam's case, Ryan, Cam, you brought it up on the show. He's going to be, if he tries to do someone else, if he doesn't do him to the best extent that he can, to his best ability, he's going to be sitting at home anyway.
100%. You know, and that's how I see it. if he tries to be something else, if he tries to preserve himself to have a longer career or be put in a better position long term, then he won't be a football player anymore. And maybe it's about your priorities. If his priority is, you know what, I want to do this a certain way so that I am healthy, then that's the smart thing to do. But I don't think he can do that and continue being an NFL starting quarterback for any team in the NFL, especially looking at the way teams passed on it.
Ryan, think of how his fortunes could shift here. I keep bringing it up on the show. You just brought it up. Two plays this year, Seattle goal line, Bills when he got stripped. And he's 5-3 with four great wins, right? And he is Cam. Should he be an MVP? You can't judge him by traditional stats, that kind of stuff. Instead, it's like, you know, maybe his career's over as a starter. Like this second half of the season right now, there's so, the variables, like the swing is so great for him. The story of this season could either be, oh my God, look at how Cam has matured. Look at how he sacrificed for his team. Look at how his teammates saw that and followed him. Look at how he took the Patriots from looking like dead in the water to contending for a playoff spot. Or it can be Cam's, you know, it's just not for him anymore. Like, what? I can't remember a player, given Cam's age, his accomplishments, yet coming off injury, with this level of uncertainty at this point in his career. Can you? I can't think of an example that's similar to this.
No, you really can't, and you especially can't at that position. Usually when you accomplish some of the things that Cam Newton has, you kind of have a get-out-of-jail-free card. Teams are going to continue to recycle you. Teams are going to continue to use you until they feel like you're used all the way up. But I think what we've seen is maybe because of Cam's injury, maybe because of his style of play, that they may feel like he's used up already. And I think some of the things we've seen throughout this season, which I agree with you, if Cam played the exact same way, but he gets in the end zone against Seattle, he holds on to the ball against Buffalo, I think we're speaking of it differently because you can't judge him by traditional stats. But you can't judge him by his effect he has on the game and wins and losses. And losing those games hurt him because now you do look at the traditional way of playing the position.
Ryan Orlovsky said yesterday, and I had also said, the Bills may be the biggest threat to the Chiefs at this moment in the AFC, like if the playoffs started right now. Who do you think is the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC?
I do think it's Pittsburgh. I think for many of the reasons you guys probably believe Buffalo, but I think we all see the quarterback a little differently. I don't know if you can beat Patrick Mahomes without having a dude who believes he's better than Patrick Mahomes. And not necessarily
a delusional dude, in other words.
Yes. I was talking about a player in the league with Chris Long, and he texted me back and he goes, he's one of my favorite teammates of all time because he's delusionally confident.
Right.
Basically saying that he thinks he's a lot better than he is, and so sometimes he competes and plays in that way.
Over
I think
head,
Ben Roethlisberger, though, at the end of the game, won't be scared that Patrick Mahomes is on the other side. He'll feel like, you know what, I have two championships. I have two Super Bowls, and we've watched him make clutch plays throughout this season. That team has the best defense in the AFC, so I believe they'll make Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs work to score points. And I believe offensively they can give them trouble, and they have a quarterback who can make big plays at the end of the games. Because think about it. The only time we've ever seen Patrick Mahomes lose in the playoffs, he was playing the greatest quarterback of all time, and it still took one of his guys to line up offside in order for that to happen.
I always think that a team like – I know you're a fight fan and a student of it, of combat sports. I always think of fighters and teams with overwhelming offenses as becoming overrated, and because mediocrity can't do anything with an overwhelming offense. They just get steamrolled. But well-roundedness doesn't fare the same against mediocrity, doesn't look as dominant to the naked eye as just an overwhelming offense. So the greatest show on turf loses to the Patriots. But you never knew the Patriots were great until they did that. Like, they had to, Felix Trinidad loses to Hopkins. But you never would have thought Hopkins was better than Trinidad until you saw them together, because Hopkins was well-rounded, Trinidad was a steamroller, right? Pittsburgh reminds me of that. Pittsburgh may be the kind of team that needs another great team where you can really see everything they can do on both sides of the ball. But against just whatever, kind of like an also-ran team, you're not going to be blown away by the Steelers. You may be right. They may pose the greatest risk to the Chiefs for that reason. They're actually well-rounded, the Steelers, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But you know how it is, too, though, you know, Max. You know, those type of fighters you're talking about, you know, they may be 30-1 or 30-2, but people always find ways and reasons to pick at them and nitpick them. And then when they get that big win, now you look at their record in its totality and you respect them. They become Hall of Famers. And I think that's kind of what the Pittsburgh Steelers are. What they've done, and I said this on Get Up, is everybody has a bad day, right? The Kansas City Chiefs had a bad day against the Las Vegas Raiders, and they lost. And we all believe that they're the best team in football. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers, up until this point, no matter who they play, whether it's the Cleveland Browns, whether it's, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, Tennessee Titans, they've never had a day bad enough to lose a football game. And that's right. Difficult. There's a reason the Miami Dolphins are the only, you know, undefeated team to win a Super Bowl, because it's hard to do. And so I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are that team that could really give the Kansas City Chiefs fit in a playoff-type situation.
Well, I'm glad you and I got to talk Steelers, because I know, you know, you years ago were winning with the Steelers championship, right? And that's great. And contemporaneously, like at the same time, I was playing against the Steelers in GM mode and as a GM in franchise mode using the Giants, and I beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. This is going back probably about 10 years. It was just simulating the games on Madden. But still, I think that means that when you and I talk Steelers, there's some value for the audience. The great Ryan Clark, ladies and gentlemen. Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. Should the White Sox have looked past Tony La Russa's DUI?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Tony La Russa, as everyone commented at the time, Jeff Passan, Sarah Spain, like a lot of people at ESPN who commented on it, were like, this is an idiotic hire, essentially. Essentially, it was an idiotic hire. Jerry Reinsdorf, I know you can hear me, Chicago. Reinsdorf pulled a really kind of arrogant move. He said, to hell with what the fans want, to hell with being competitive, to hell with following the rules. I want to make myself feel better because I didn't want to let him go. I regret letting him go in the first place. I want to hire back my guy. It was a stupid, stupid move by Reinsdorf. Speaking of stupid, here's Michael Wilbon on. Well, hold on. Before I even get, let me not get ahead of myself. Tony La Russa is being charged with a DUI. It's not the first time in his life. Upon his arrest, he told the police, "I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person." He flashed the ring at law enforcement, who arrested him in February, told him, "I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person," while being placed in the back of a cruiser. The incident report obtained by ESPN also showed La Russa appearing incoherent and expressing mistrust in blood alcohol level tests. The White Sox said Monday night that they were aware of La Russa's pending charges, which were filed one day before the team officially hired him October 29th. Think about this for a second. You have a million better candidates for the job than La Russa, who hasn't managed in almost a decade. This Tony La Russa, who said about Kaepernick 4 years ago, if someone tries to do that on my team, you know, that he won't be allowed on the field. Shut up, La Russa. Who the hell are you? You can't tell a player to go out on the field. That has nothing to do with your jurisdiction. You're representing my team. Shut up. And then he had to walk that back. He had to walk it back. He loved the idea of imposing the way he felt about a political issue, a social issue, on his club. Well, that's not the place to make a political statement. Well, if by not standing for the flag, you're making a political statement, then by standing for it, you're also making a political statement. So according to Tony La Russa, it's okay to make a political statement as long as it's his political statement. Wrong, dummy. It's not how it works. Now, here's the thing. Tony La Russa is one of the best managers of all time. There's no denying it. The question is why. Number one, he's a very loyal guy. And he gets a lot of loyalty. That's reciprocated. And that's a commendable personal quality. That is a commendable quality. And a lot of times, with people with whom we don't agree about a number of things, or whose moral kind of fiber we call into question, or whose behavior we question, or intelligence we question, or whatever, things about them you don't like, we can also acknowledge where they are strong. And some people may say, hey, personal loyalty, when it interferes with judgment or with ethical behavior, is actually a bad thing. But we have to acknowledge that we appreciate that as human beings. That's something that we find on some level to be emotionally satisfying. And he appears to be a loyal guy, and he appears to reciprocate loyalty. And that's one of the reasons I think he was a very good manager. He's one of the best. You know what another reason might be? You know what Jack McDowell, White Sox Cy Young winner back in the day, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I can't remember the exact year. Late 80s, early 90s. Jack McDowell won 20 games a couple of times. And not only won the Cy Young, I think he finished in the top three. He may have even been second to the Cy Young the year either before or after he won it. Said that when he got to the White Sox, there was a system already in place left by La Russa where they were stealing signs from center field by flashing a light. And in the manager's office, there was a video monitor where they could zoom in and steal the signs. And the starting pitcher that day, according to McDowell, was in charge of turning on the camera. Now, La Russa, when he was asked about this, said, well, ask McDowell if he was on those teams, because La Russa had already left before McDowell got there. What kind of answer is that? Ask him if he... No, he wasn't on the team. So how would he know? Dude, don't be slick. Don't talk slick. Don't talk slick, Tony. Yes or no? Did you do it or not? Dude's falling asleep, inebriated. Remember in his parked car going back, I don't know how many years already. So that's cheating. And is there proof that Tony La Russa cheated? No. But according to Jack McDowell, who's really making another point, the point McDowell is making is some people are gone after and some people are given passes for the same behavior, right? We're outraged that some people steal signs, but what if it's Tony La Russa? Now, that's one instance of cheating, if it's true. McDowell seems to think it's true. Then La Russa's the manager of the Oakland A's. They were a juggernaut. You ever notice how many guys hit on the Oakland A's? Some of whom had never hit before like that. We all know it was a flashpoint. Not that guys hadn't juiced before then, but that was a big cheating team. Big cheaters team. Canseco, McGuire. But he won there. Then he goes to St. Louis. You ever notice how many guys on those St. Louis teams in the early aughts, 2005, 6, 8, whatever it was, also hit like never before? These were good players. St. Louis had a stacked team. They were loaded. But guys were having career offensive years there. And Tony La Russa's the manager. He's in Chicago. McDowell says they steal signs. He's in Oakland. They're obviously juicing, and Canseco's admitted it. And then he's in St. Louis, and everyone's offensive numbers jump up. And this guy gets the White Sox job when he seems to be out of touch with his players. He had to walk his Kaepernick comments back. When he hasn't managed in a decade, when there were much better choices than him, he walks in with a DUI charge where he's trying to use his status as a Hall of Famer to get out. He doesn't think the rules apply to him. Sign stealing, juicing, there are rules. He doesn't think they apply to him. But what he does think applies are unwritten rules. If he likes them, then he applies them to his players. You think he should be the White Sox manager? Here's Michael Wilbon on Tony La Russa.
Probably back out of the agreement that they have with him, Tony. I mean, being responsible and being accountable are seemingly, to me anyway, more necessary where we are in the culture now than ever before. And it's not enough to be accountable and responsible for a baseball game when you're explaining yourself afterward. Real life circumstances should count even more. Tony La Russa comes off as particularly stupid in this case, and he's not. We know that.
No, about a lot of baseball things, he's not. I don't know. I've never talked to La Russa. I don't know if he's smart or stupid. I don't know. But he is an excellent baseball manager who has been accused as even as collateral kind of he was sort of collateral damage in McDowell's talk, but has been accused of cheating in more than one way, in more than one instance and with more than one organization, or at least that those teams cheated while he was the manager. What has he done in the intervening 10 years except be an awful executive to get a job? A plum job, too. The White Sox are loaded. Because Reinsdorf is saying, look, this is my shiny toy, the White Sox. I'm the owner. To hell with the fans. To hell with trying to win. To hell with fair play. To hell with the law, right? How many DUIs does the guy need? He's now the manager of the White Sox. Have fun, Chicago. Max Kellerman Show is brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Should the Jets trade the number one pick if or when they get it?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776.
You mentioned this earlier. You alluded to it earlier. Brett Favre thinks the Eagles should have gone with Nick Foles over Carson Wentz because Foles shines better in the Eagles system.
No doubt. But Foles couldn't do anything with this Eagles team with all the injuries either. No, neither quarterback could do anything. Foles is the guy. If you have pass protection, if you can run block, if you have a running game, if you have receivers, if you have a defense, oh, you need everything with Foles? Yes. Foles is a guy where if you put him on a loaded team, not only can he manage it and run your team properly, he will play big on third down. He will be big in the moment of truth. He will get his teammates will believe in him and he in them. He'll be able to lead. He's the guy where if you're ready, he can put you over the top. Wentz is more talented, but is at this point, it's year five. If we're still saying, when is he going to put it all together? The answer is probably never.
5 years. Wow. All right. Hey, listen to this. Todd McShay. Take a listen to Todd. Hey, man, the Jets are so bad, they should trade the number one pick.
Nah, son. I like Greeny's idea of trading Darnold to the Colts. I think that makes a lot of sense, actually. Mad that I didn't think of it. I think that's a really good idea. The Colts need a quarterback. The Jets are going to pick first. Mm-hmm. You got to take that. Like, if you have a chance to get a special quarterback, I mean a special kind of MVP caliber player, you must take that. So, yeah, see you later, Sam Darnold. Hello, Trevor Lawrence, if you're the Jets, of course.
All right, fair enough. And I'm going to skip one and go here to Cal. Kyle Kuzma wants a sizable contract for the Lakers. If you're Lakers, you're paying him.
Well, what is he doing for the Lakers? When you say sizable contract, for what? Is he in the nah, son.
All right.
Nah, what's he doing? When you say sizable contract, not to play basketball. He may have some other talents.
Modeling?
Yo, Kyle Kuzma not getting paid to play basketball? Like, come on. Kyle Kuzma may be, like, he is not an average NBA player. But, well, let's put it this way. He's not an average starter. He's good enough to get minutes in the NBA. He is. He is not a mid-pack starter, right? He's not a three-star player. He's a 2.75 star player. Get paid, what, the mid-level exception? What is he talking about, get paid?
I don't know. All right.
By the way, that said, Kyle, go get your money.
Yeah, right. Heard that. Get paid. Hey, Isaiah Thomas on one Michael Jordan. He just wasn't my competition. My focus was on Bird, Magic, Dr. J, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Until I watched Last Dance, I didn't realize MJ felt about that way about me. You buying that, Max?
Not at all. Nah, son. Not at all. But I will say this. He's not lying. Like, just everyone keep in mind, when Jordan came around, the Pistons were on top of the world. Jordan was not playing with another all-star. The first time he played with another All-Star was Scottie Pippen, took the Pistons 7 games. Pippen got a migraine. They lost game 7. Next year, they came back. They swept the Pistons. They never looked back. They won the championship every year throughout Jordan's prime after that in under 7 games. So he wasn't Jordan's competition because no one was any competition for Jordan. Zeke was the greatest little guy of all time. Harden and Westbrook on their way out of Houston.
Max, the podcast.